We have quite a busy docket for today with a number of cases being heard solely on the briefs. We have two cases scheduled for argument this morning. The first case is 21-1981, Sanofi Aventis Deutschland versus Mylan Pharmaceuticals. Mr. Darby, I understand that you've asked for 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This is Kenneth Darby speaking for the appellant, Sanofi Aventis. And I'm here today because the board invalidated Sanofi's patent directed to pen-type drug delivery devices based on a clutch release bearing for a car transmission. Besides lacking substantial evidence to support its factual findings, the board also committed two critical legal errors, each of which independently and separately supports reversal. The board's first error is that it ruled in favor of a petitioner that built its case on the wrong legal standard for analogous art. Instead of holding Mylan to its petitioner's statutory burden, the board instead carried that burden for Mylan and shifted it improperly to Sanofi. The board's second error is that it misapplied this court's test for analogous art, specifically the reasonable pertinence criterion. Instead of applying this court's test, which tells us to look to the particular problem solved by the claimed invention, the board created its own test, whereby any problem merely relevant to the claimed invention can set the benchmark for pertinence. These errors infected the remainder of the board's analysis regarding Degen and those portions of the final written decision.
Does it matter if you have a situation where the prior art states the particular problem to base the particular problem on the prior art and not the invention itself, not the patent?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I think there is a problem when we're not looking to the particular problem solved by the claimed invention. So certainly any reasonable pertinence analysis should start with the challenged patent. And it should find the challenged patent's particular problem and then look to the prior art and find the problem solved by the prior art referencing in question. And we should compare those problems. And there should be a determination through the lens of a person of skill in the art as to whether or not the prior art's problem.
But in order to have art that's analogous, you're dealing with prior art. So is it totally necessary to base the pertinent problem test on the problem expressed in the patent, or can it be based on the problem expressed in the prior art that you're looking at because you're trying to determine whether that reference is indeed analogous?
Right, Your Honor. I think we should certainly be looking to the challenged patent's problem when we're looking to determine what is analogous art, right? The court's cases, for example, most recently in the Donner Technologies case decided in 2020, the court made clear that we look to the challenge patents problem, we look to the problem in the art, and we make a comparison amongst them. I'm feeling I maybe didn't get to the sort of the kernel of your question there. Maybe can you throw it back at me one more time?
No, I think you're hitting around the edges of what.
Okay.
We're looking at whether the reference is reasonably pertinent to the particular problem. So the problem that we're looking at, do we search for the problem in the claim? I mean, in the patent,
right?
Or are we talking about a problem that's disclosed in the prior art?
Right. Yeah, we're certainly looking to the particular problem of the challenged patent, and not simply any problem out there in the prior art. Right, I think that there is a difference between, for example, motivation to combine, where we can look to any problem solved out there in the art. But analogous art is a little bit different of an inquiry. It's related, but different, right? We're trying to determine which art are we going to consider prior art that qualifies for the test of obviousness, right? So it's a little bit different inquiry, and for analogous art, we're certainly looking to the inventor's particular problem. And this court's cases are very clear on that, right? And so that's certainly our position on the matter. Did I get there with an answer for you there? Okay, great. So returning to the board's first error, its failure to hold Mylan to its petitioner's burden, I think it's telling that the board's final written decision found Dejin pertinent based on a theory that doesn't have any basis in Mylan's papers, either the petition or the reply. And so if we turn together to the petition, this is at page 111 of the appendix. What we don't see in the petition is a formal analogous art analysis. We don't see the petition quote this court's standard for reasonable pertinence. We don't see the petition identify the problem solved by the 614 patent, the particular problem. We don't see a comparison of that problem to Dejin's problem. We see instead, and what the board cited to you is here on appendix 111. And Mylan says, Professor Erdman explains how Dejin, while concerned with the clutch bearing, addresses a problem analogous to that addressed in Burin. Right, but Burin is, of course, not the 614 patent. It's another art reference that's offered in combination with Dejin. And so here, we have a petition that's deficient on its face as a matter of law. It's applying the wrong test for analogous art. It's out of step with this court's precedent. And if we turn to the reply, now skipping ahead in the, here in the appendix to 3154. In the reply, things actually get worse for Mylan. Because there, Mylan reiterates and, in fact, doubles down on its improper focus on Burin. Of course, in Mylan's view, the problem Burin defined is what set the benchmark for pertinence. And Mylan says, 3154, bridging to 3155, Burin's suggestion provides the pertinent problem in this case.
Didn't your expert, though, understand that the appropriate framing was with respect to the 614 patent? Are you asking us to elevate form over substance here?
Thank you for the question, Your Honor. Our expert was asked to evaluate the axial fixation problem that Mylan put forward, and to evaluate whether or not that could be the 614 patent's problem. And so he did that analysis and came to the conclusion that it could not be the 614 patent's problem. Axial fixation is not referenced in the 614 patent as being its problem. And in fact, it's overly broad, as Mr. Rowe set forth in his declaration. And Mr. Rowe is not a legal expert, and so he wasn't evaluating whether Mylan was applying the correct test for analogous art. What he was evaluating is axial fixation a problem statement that's particular to the 614 patent? And he came to the conclusion that it was not. So turning back here to the reply, again, I'm at 3154. Now I'm reading from footnote 4, at the bottom of the page here. And it says, this is Mylan responding to Sanofi's patent owner response, where we, of course, quoted the court's cases, quoted the court's precedent, and did a full analysis under the reasonable pertinence criterion. And Mylan in response says, Sanofi's interpretation of analogous art law would force the very hindsight that Sanofi bemoans, because the POSA could only consider the inventor's disclosed problem. But of course, that's the test for analogous art, right? And we see here very clearly Mylan telling us in its reply that it's not going to apply that test. It's going to look to Burin's problem instead.
Can you address footnote 4 of the board's decision, just that sort of explanation that was provided there?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I was headed there next. So this is appendix 22, footnote 4 at the bottom of the page. So this is the board making its logical leap from the 614 patent's particular problem, which the board agreed that Sanofi had provided the particular problem of the 614 patent, securing a cartridge against movement in a housing. And this is the board making a leap to get to Mylan's broader Burin-based problem. And in the board's view, it was justified in making that leap because the Burin problem is, quote, also relevant to the 614 patent's problem. But, of course, also relevant isn't the standard either, right? The standard is to find a particular problem, not a problem that's merely relevant, right? We're looking for the particular problem. So there's certainly a misapplication of the law here by the board, but also, and maybe not more fundamentally, but equally important, we have the board diverging from what's in the petition and what's in the reply. Right? So Mylan told us it was not looking for any sort of relationship between the 614 patent and Burin.
When they refer to the word relevant, though, aren't they using just a synonym to pertinent there?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Your Honor, and I'm glad you asked it. So pertinence is you find the particular problem and then you determine relevance or pertinence to the prior art reference in question. That would be Dejin. Right, so what what the board is doing here is they're saying that Burin's problem, so not Dejin, but Burin's problem is relevant to the 614 patent, and therefore they can substitute Burin's problem as the 614 patent's problem for the test. Right, but of course that's not the test; these are two different documents.
If there's evidence that Burin's identifies a problem in the patent,
mm-hmm.
and Burns and the Genus address the same problem, then why is it unreasonable to say the Genus identifies with a problem in the patent as well?
Sure. I think the main issue there is that Burn is not the 614 patent, right? And so, I'll take a step back here. We're not convinced that Burn's problem is axial fixation either. Axial fixation is almost hardly a problem. It's more of an abstract idea or a notion. And it's taken from paragraphs 3 and paragraph 7 of Burn, right? Those are out of context statements. It's not Burn articulating his problem, right? Paragraph 3 is Burn talking generally about springs and medical devices, and paragraph 7 is Burn really sort of articulating claim language in the summary, right? Burn really talks about his problem in paragraph 5 of that reference. But I think even setting that part aside, the problem needs to be based in the challenged patent at issue. And just because Burn is the primary reference in a combination that's asserted against the 614 patent doesn't mean that Burn's problem is the 614 patent's problem.
But just looking at that footnote, it just seems to me that the board, this is the defined problem is also relevant to the 614 patent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the defined problem here is the problem in Burn. So isn't that a finding that relates back to the 614 patent?
Well, we would certainly disagree that this is a finding relating back to the 614. What the board has done here, right, is the board has identified the particular problem back on appendix 20 and appendix 21. This is where the board does a full analysis of the 614 patent, right, and it reaches a conclusion. The board says, makes a factual finding here. It says, we agree with patent owner's assertion. And they're talking about securing a cartridge against movement within a housing. And it's only then that the board makes its logical leap, not based on what's in the 614 patent, but merely to get to a broader version of the problem statement. The board has left the realm of the 614 patent, where it was left with the impression that securing a cartridge against movement was a particular problem, and it's now trying to get to a broader problem so that it can sweep in DeGene's prior art.
Okay, so let's say that the board erred with the reasonably pertinent mm-hmm. particular problem analysis. Isn't that cured with the same field of endeavor analysis?
Oh, well, that's a great question, Your Honor. I'm glad you asked that one. Certainly not in this case, in this particular case. There are two criteria, as you're hitting on. And here the parties agreed. Everybody agreed that DeGene was far afield, in a totally different field of endeavor than the 614 patent. And I am sure that the board notes that here, and I'm going to find it for you. Let's see here. This is on Appendix 19. Bottom of the page, full paragraph there, second sentence. Petitioner concedes that DeGene is not in the same field of endeavor as the 614 patent.
Okay.
Right, so if the court were to find that something went wrong here with the analogous art test and the reasonable pertinence criterion, then certainly the inquiry would be concluded in Sanofi's favor.
Okay, Counselor, you're into your rebuttal time. Do you want to reserve it?
I will reserve it. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Let's hear from Mr. Karsten.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Doug Karsten. What we have below here is a straightforward application of KSR, textbook KSR case. We have familiar elements arranged by known methods yielding predictable results. And the art itself provided a direct suggestion on how to solve the problem that the 614 patent inventors had, i.e. using a spring washer, in order to bias two components against each other.
Which reference are you talking about? Which prior art reference?
I'm referring to the Burn reference specifically, okay. Your Honor, which was our fundamental reference below. Sanofi has tried to establish or argue for essentially two errors. One, they're saying that the board created a new theory by marrying or by saying that the 614 problem was not contained within Mylan's analysis. And that's absolutely wrong. I mean, if you look at page APPX 89, the very first page of the very first submission made by Mylan, there is an analysis of the 614 patent and talking about the claimed invention of the 614 patent and how the problem was biasing one component against another, which is the same problem that we've alleged all along.
But for analogous art purposes, was the Byrne reference compared to the problem stated in the patent?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, there's a specific factual finding at APPX 21 through 22 in which the court just looked at, in fact, in which the board below found that the problems were the same. There was that direct comparison. In fact, as you go through the petition, this footnote 4, which is at APPX 22, the defined problem is also relevant to the 614 patent, especially given that the 614 patent acknowledges that Byrne spring performs the same function.
Where did you in the record tie the problem of the 614 patent to the problem discussed in Byrne?
So if you look at the first page of our petition, APPX 89, you go through and we're talking about the claimed invention. And I'm happy to direct you there. In the second paragraph towards the end, to ensure the cartridge does not move within the cartridge retaining member, the device incorporates a spring element, a spring washer, to apply an axially directed biasing force that presses and holds the cartridge against the cartridge retaining member. To ensure the necessary biasing force, the spring washer includes at least two fixing elements to hold the washer in place. And it goes on to say, as this petition demonstrates, the notion that a spring element, like a spring washer, may be used to secure components against movement within a device was nothing new. And that's the Byrne reference that we start to talk about there. We identify the problem based upon the claimed element, which is what the law requires, and then we compare, in the context of the art, the particular against the claimed invention problem. That's exactly what this court's case law directs us to do and is exactly what the board considered below. So there was no issue here in terms of the board creating a new theory. The theory was there from the very first page of the very first submission. And as we walk through in the petition, each of the particular claim limitations, we then do the assessment of the particular claim limitation from the 614 patent against the particular prior art. And so that's the comparison that's done here, Your Honor.
Well, did you just discuss the problem in both patents? Did you specifically tie the 614 patent to the problem in Byrne?
Well, if you look at for example, the section, first, at APPX 99, the level of ordinary skill in the art, which the board below adopts, specifically ties into this very issue. So, for example, if you look at APPX 99, down below, when we're talking about the level of ordinary skill in the art, we talk about how the POSA would have considered devices in other fields that exploited the biasing force of springs. I mean, we're even the level of ordinary skill in the art, and it's undisputed here that the reasonable pertinence test is done through that filter, requires the person of skill here to understand and acknowledge the exploitation, the types of things that use this biasing force. And then as we go further through the analysis, Your Honor, with respect to the particular claim limitations, at, for example, I'm flipping speedily through, Your Honor.
Are you going to the petition now?
We are in the petition, Your Honor, yes. At APPX, apologies. Thank you. At APPX 112, this is ground one, claims 1 through 18 being obvious over Byrne, Venezia, and Deschenais. the paragraph below, as shown in the annotated views of figures 1 and below, Burin teaches injection pens also having four similar components that perform the same function as those claimed in Harms. We're talking directly about the function, about the problem that's being solved here.
Where in the petition do you identify the problem in DeGens as being reasonably pertinent to the problem in the 614 pen?
Well, remember, Your Honor, Burin, this case presents a very interesting fact that I don't know that any of the other cases do.
I see the references you're making to Burin.
Right.
I'm asking about to DeGens. Did you make that argument with respect to that reference?
Well, the panel below made specific factual findings based upon the petition and Professor Erdman's declaration at APPX 31 and 32. That Dijonet teaches, the cover, it's what it's called in Dijonet, has a cover that meets the spring washer limitation, that the cover has legs, this is APPX 32-33, that it has the claimed fixing elements, this is APPX 37-38. And all of those specific factual findings that were supported by substantial evidence are undisputed. Sanofi didn't challenge any one of those.
But give me that site again, Warren.
Sure.
I see. Is it Dijonet? Is that how you pronounce that?
I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it, Your Honor. I'm doing my best. I'm looking at APPX 32 and 33, Your Honor. And this is where the board below is assessing Dijonet. Or Dijonet, or however Your Honor wishes to pronounce it. I'm happy to give you any pronunciation you'd like. And there are specific factual findings that Dijonet has a cover that meets the claim spring washer limitation. There's specific finding that the cover also includes legs 34 by which the cover is attached to the bearing. This is bridging on the bottom of 32 onto the top of 33. This is Dijonet. This is assessing it against the claims and the claim limitations, the problem of the 614 patent through the filter of Burin. But there was a suggestion by my friend earlier that
looking at page 32 in the paragraph, it says, finally, the patent owner argues that the only basis for petitioner's reliance on Dijonet is hindsight. And it goes on and addresses the clutch bearing cover in Dijonet. This says, petitioner counters a Burin plainly teaches at the spring. But I don't see there where it says that Dijonet plainly teaches the spring biases.
Well, it says in a similar manner, so in that bottom paragraph, Dijonet's cover 28 includes support zones that are formed by the median portion of the axially resilient deformable undulation. Due to the undulations with which it is formed, the transverse wall of the cover elastically presses the outer race. This is the biasing force. This is what is giving the biasing force with respect to the Dijonet cover. And then,
is it proper for the board to make the comparison if your petition did not actually tie Dijonet, Dijonet, however you say it, to the 614 patent?
No, we do tie Dijonet specifically to the 614 patent in assessing each one of the claim limitations in the petition. That's what Professor Erdman did as well in his declaration. And so if
you
just
give me the best record site for that, for what you just described, because I want to make sure I
sure,
that.
Your Honor. So if you look at APPX 112, this is talking specifically in this one where I just was about Burin performing the same function. If you look at 127 to 128, APPX
112, where we're at.
On 112, that was talking about the same function. That was the, so if you look, as shown in the annotated views, it's the one that I just read to you, that Burren teaches injection pens having four similar components that perform the same function. And then it goes on to identify the particular limitations. If you turn then to APPX, sorry, 127 to 128. And on, actually, I'm sorry, APPX 130. In addition, Desjardins illustrates the common predictable use of a spring washer to solve a similar problem, biasing components for axial fixation. I apologize, Your Honor, it took me a while to get there, but I'm glad I did. Here, we are specifically talking about Desjardins in connection with the use of the spring washer, addressing exactly the problem that we're talking about. And there was a suggestion earlier that that there was an error in terms of defining the problem. That definition of the problem was based upon substantial evidence. It's a factual finding.
Here, the decision speaks to a similar problem. We take that to be the relevant problem?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. The similar problem, this is our petition. This is not the decision below. But we're talking about the problem of harms, which is the biasing. And remember, we're in the context of reasonable pertinence. So we've got the person of skill in the art. And the person of skill in the art is not a rigid automaton. This person of skill in the art is one of ordinary creativity. That's what we know from KSR. And we know from KSR that this person of skill in the art can be motivated based upon any problem known in the art. And I take issue with the notion that the reasonable pertinence is different somehow from the motivation. We really are talking about flip sides of the same coin.
If we find that the board erred in connecting Degenis to the 614 patent, is there anything that cures that error? Is there anything you would point us to kind of cure that?
Yes, Your Honor. So we know that this is analogous art because Burren tells us it's analogous art. So Burren at paragraph 17 talks specifically about exactly how one can go, the things in the toolkit that a person of skill in the art can go about using and looking for in order to solve the problem of biasing one component against the other. Plate springs, springs with legs. This is taught directly by the art, directing the person of skill in the art in terms of what things to look for. This isn't just an automotive clutch. And frankly, this court's case law allows us to look at automotive fields in order to solve other problems.
The concern I have with your argument is that you seem to be lifting parts from the final written decision and then labeling them as, you know, the argument and relying them on to support the argument that you're making right now. But your burden is to show analogous art by preponderance of evidence, correct?
And we did below, Your Honor.
Are you saying that the citations you gave us up to this point, either apart or together, that rises to a level of preponderance of evidence?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. The petition was directed at exactly the right test. It identified the problem from the harms claims on even as early as page one of the first filing below the petition. And it went through methodically those claim limitations against the three references that we identified: Burren, Venezia, and Desjardins. And it identified in Burren what the problem was, it identified in 614 what the problem was, and it compared those two throughout that analysis. And the board relied upon that analysis and upon that substantial evidence, crediting Dr. Erdman, Professor Erdman, our expert below. And even down to the granular level, the level of ordinary skill in the art, the filter through which we are required to conduct this analysis, Your Honor, even the person of skill in the art has particular sensitivity and knowledge with respect to biasing components together. All of those are factual findings, which Sanofi has not disputed, Your Honor. I see I'm past my time, but unless you have questions, Your Honor, I'm happy to. I could talk about this stuff all day.
If our colleagues have any questions, I think we've got your argument.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I would like to thank the court for resuming the in-person arguments. It's always a great pleasure to be here in person.
It is. From my point of view, it is a pleasure.
Thank you.
To put the faces to the argument, let's say.
Exactly. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Okay. Mr. Darby, we'll restore you back to the full 3 minutes of your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Your Honor, I want to clarify that this is not a KSR issue. This is an analogous art case. This is not a motivation to combine. Case, right, so KSR was obviously about motivation to combine, but it didn't change the test for analogous art. Both before KSR and after KSR, this court has applied the same test for analogous art under reasonable pertinence. Right? We've looked to the particular problem solved by the claimed invention. We've compared that problem to the prior art, to Gen here, third pronunciation.
You heard the citations that your friend on the other side gave us, right, as supporting preponderance of evidence.
Yes.
What's your response to that, or is that to those citations?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I was going to get there, and I'm glad you fast-forwarded me to it. So these citations are addressing principally either other Gram factors, like the Pasita's level of skill, or a claim-by-claim element analysis or motivation to combine, right? So those aren't... That's not an analogous art analysis. If those things, if you could just map the art to the claims, right, or just do a motivation test and analysis, then there would be no need for the test for analogous art. If all we needed to do was map to the claims and provide motivation, the analogous art test would not exist. But of course it does, right? And so we need to have a very particular and specific analysis in the petition.
So is Mylan actually required to say something to the effect, now we move to the second part of the pertinent art analysis, and then get into that argument? It seems like we've been given some citations, but we cobbled them together. Is it your argument that this had to have been made in a single unified argument with respect to the two-part test for analogous art?
Well, it certainly would have been easier if they did put it under a heading for us, but I don't want to elevate form, you know, over function here, or anything like that. But I will say that the board is not tasked with playing archaeologist with the record, right? The board didn't go into all of these different places in the petition and pick and choose from them. The board found the one place in the petition where Mylan addressed Degen and addressed its analogousness. They used the term its colloquial sense, not its really legal sense. But they found the one place, that's Appendix 111, and that's what the board relied on. So I think we ought to look to what the board relied on, right, and look to the petition.
Respond to opposing counsel's argument that the petition does discuss the problem of the 614 patent?
We would absolutely disagree with that. We certainly see that there's discussion of the 614 patent in the petition, as you would expect. Mm-hmm. And there's discussion of comparing Burns to the 614 patent, as you would expect. It's the primary reference. But again, if all you needed to do was compare Burns to the claims and compare Degen to the claims, the analogous art test would not exist. I see that I'm just about out of time here. I just had one more point. I wanted to get to substantial evidence just very quickly, Your Honors. On the question of substantial evidence, there is none for the board to have rejected Sanofi's problem statement after making a factual finding agreeing with it. And there's also no substantial evidence to find axial fixation as the particular problem solved by the 614 patent. There's a leap from language in Burren that's not in the 614 patent. The board made that leap. Mylan didn't provide any evidence or argument to that effect. And in fact, there's unrebutted testimony on the record from Mr. Rowe, patent owner's expert, about the 614 patent's problem. And certainly those portions of the record, again, that analysis is undisputed, and we certainly think that it refutes the board's findings.
Thank you very much. We thank counsel for the arguments in this case, and